Brother Rich will be here for church. Brother Rich cannot take any risk of getting infections. Nobody is to shake his hand. I told him he could sit out in the hall. He just wants to be here, but I just want you to know that he just can't take any risk of any infection at all. So just keep that in mind. I'd like to again turn to the book of John, chapter 9. We began last week looking at the healing of a blind man. John is the only one who records this particular miracle. More verses are devoted to the surrounding events of this miracle than any other. But we'll read verse 59 of chapter 8 through verse 7. Again, the entire chapter deals with this incident. Then took they up stones to cast at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay, and said unto him, Go, wash in the pool Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. He went his way therefore, and washed, and came seeing. As we saw last week concerning this man's condition, 12 times here in John chapter 9 we read that this man was blind. So the Lord emphasizes very strongly that this man was blind. He lived in darkness, which we looked at last week, which all through the scriptures is used to speak of the state of the unregenerate, the state of the sinner. If you keep a mark there and turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, we see that darkness is used as a state of the unregenerate. But ye, brethren, the saved, are not in darkness, that day, the day of Christ, should overtake you as a thief. Ye are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night, nor of darkness. So darkness is a picture of the unregenerate state. We're not only told that this man was blind, we are told 5 times here in John chapter 9 that he was blind from his birth, that he was born blind. That is, he has spent his entire life in darkness. And that is true, of course, of the unsaved, of the unregenerate. They spend their entire life, they spend all their days in darkness until the Lord intervenes. And that's how it was with this man. However old he was, he spent all his days in darkness until the Lord did something in his life. You'll notice it is not until the man did something, it was until God did something. And that is still true today. Man will live all of his days in darkness. And every lost sinner, it doesn't matter how intelligent they might be, it doesn't matter how moral they might be all lost sinners live in darkness. They live in darkness, they walk in darkness, they sit in darkness, they are in darkness. And that was the case with this man. But not only was he in darkness, we see that he was poor. We see in verse 8, the neighbors of this man not only confirmed his blindness, but they remembered him as one who sat and begged. In verse 8, the neighbors therefore, and they which before had seen him that he was blind, said, "Is not this he that sat and begged?" They see a difference. Is not this he? That's asked in amazement, somewhat of shock, because a difference has been made in this man's life. But he sat and begged. That shows, of course, that he was destitute. He was a poor individual. And there isn't anyone more destitute than the lost sinner. There isn't anyone more bankrupt than the lost sinner. Because the lost sinner has a debt that is greater than the United States debt. Yeah, that is a sin debt. The lost sinner has a debt that they cannot possibly pay. If they had all the money in the world, if they had all the resources in the world, they still could not pay the sin debt. The sinner is destitute. No one is more destitute than a lost sinner. And this is a picture of this individual. He sat and begged. He was very, very poor. And again, this is a picture of the sinner. Notice in Ephesians 2, Ephesians 2, verse 12, that at that time, that is, in our lost days, ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope, and without God in the world. Now notice two key words which emphasize our poverty in our unsaved condition. The word without, verse 12, without Christ, void of Christ. Colossians says that Christ is all. So if you're without him, you're in bad shape. Without Christ. The latter part of the verse says, without God. The lost sinner is without. Without Christ, without God. But also notice the word no, N-O. Again, toward the end of the verse, having no hope, possessing no hope. The lost sinner is blind. The lost sinner is in darkness. The lost sinner is bankrupt, poverty-stricken, destitute. Now, if we go back to John chapter 9, we read in verse 1, and as Jesus passed by, he takes the initiative. He saw a man which was blind from his birth. The man, of course, did not see Jesus because he was blind. Jesus saw the man. He takes the initiative. Now, I believe that not only did Jesus leave the temple because they were about to stone him, but outside of that temple was a blind man, and the hour had come for him to be saved. And that's another reason Jesus left, the chief reason Jesus left the temple at this time. He saw a man. Christ saw. Just as Christ saw the widow woman of Nain, notice in Luke chapter 7, Luke chapter 7, verse 13, this woman is, the casket of her son is being carried to the cemetery. In verse 13, and when the Lord saw her, when the Lord saw her. Then notice in Luke chapter 19, verse 5, concerning Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, of course, had heard that Jesus was going to pass by that way. He wanted to see him. He had heard much about Christ. He wanted to see who this man was. He was of small stature. There was a great crowd. He could not see, so we know the story. He climbed up in a sycamore tree. In verse 5, and when Jesus came to the place, does not say that Zacchaeus saw him, because that's not the emphasis here. And when Jesus came to the place, he, Jesus, looked up and saw him. Jesus saw him. Just as Jesus saw the widow woman of Nain. Notice in Luke chapter 13, concerning the woman with an infirmity, which will be the next miracle we look at. But in Luke 13, verse 12, and when Jesus saw her, he called her to himself. When Jesus went to the pool of Bethesda, John chapter 5, verse 6, there was a great multitude of folks, and we read that Jesus saw him. So we see this over and over throughout the Gospels. And what it means is that Jesus makes the first move. Jesus takes the initiative. And now we read here in John chapter 9 and verse 1 that Jesus saw a man which was blind from his birth. He saw him. And I believe he saw him with an eye of love. He saw him with an eye of compassion. He saw him with an eye of grace. He saw him with an eye of mercy. He saw him with an eye of intent and purpose. Jesus saw him and he knew that he was going to restore this man's sight. Had not the Lord seen him, nothing would have happened. Just like with the widow woman of Nain. Had not the Lord saw her, they would have proceeded that day with that burial. Nothing would have happened. Had not the Lord saw Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus would have been content with just seeing Jesus with his physical eye. His satisfaction, his curiosity would have been satisfied. Nothing would have happened. Same with the woman with the infirmity. Had not Jesus saw her, nothing would have happened. Same with the impotent man at the pool of Bethesda. Had not Jesus seen these individuals, nothing would have happened. Had not Jesus seen this blind man would have continued in his darkness, continued living a life of destitution. This is always the case. The Lord takes the initiative. If we take the initiative, that is works. That is not grace. He takes the initiative. That is always the case. And even when the sinner thinks they took the initiative, they haven't. Because anything you and I do, he has caused us to do it. But the emphasis needs to be laid upon this fact that Jesus saw this man. And I believe, again, Jesus went out of the temple for this man. Jesus saw this man, knowing exactly what he was going to do. Now notice, upon seeing this blind man, the disciples asked Jesus a question concerning the cause of his blindness. Verse 2. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin? This man, pointing to the blind man, or was it his parents? Who is the cause of this man's blindness? Who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now their question reveals quite a bit, and we see it all the time. Their question was, first of all, based upon a false assumption. It was based upon the false assumption that this man's blindness must be attributed directly to the fact that someone has sinned. It's based upon the false assumption that this man's blindness is a result of punishment for sin. People think this way all the time, God's people. You see somebody that's in a terrible condition, and people have even said this. They'll say, well, I want somebody did something for him to be in that shape. I wonder what he did. Maybe nothing. That's a false assumption. That was the assumption that Job's friends had made as well. But if you think about that question, they weren't concerned about the man's blindness. They weren't concerned that this man had lived his entire life in darkness. And they knew this man. They knew he was born blind, because they said, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? When a child is born with very serious problems, it has been said, somebody has sinned. Could be the parents, could be the grandparents, but somebody has done something to cause this. Or they begin to wonder, what may have happened to cause this? Maybe nothing. But instead of being concerned about the blind man's blindness, their concern was, somebody did something. There's really, if you think about this question, there's self-righteousness there. And there's a feeling of superiority. We better be careful of false assumptions. Because the truth is, you and I don't know why people suffer, why they have disease, why they have sickness, why they have deformities. We don't know the reason for that unless the Lord tells us. And I don't know that the Lord tells folks this is the reason. But this was their concern. Jesus, in his answer to the question, says, neither hath this man, the blind man, sinned, nor his parents. Now, that has to be taken in context. The context is, there is the assumption that this blindness is due to the is a result of a punishment for sin. That's the context. So when Jesus says this man has not sinned, his parents has not sinned, he's not saying they're without sin. He is saying that this man's blindness is not directly attributed to any sin in this man's life. That's obvious if he was born blind. And it is not directly attributed to any sin in his parents' life. So again, beware of making false assumptions, whether verbally or in our minds. And how many times we do that? People, something tragic happens in someone's life, and people sometimes think, well, I wonder what if they were being punished for something. I wonder. That's really lacks a lot of compassion. People have even said, well, I knew it was going to happen. Knew it was. They've got sin in their lives. Well, if with that attitude, what's going to happen to you? Because you too have sin in your life. So again, we need to be careful of this attitude. But then Jesus states the reason for this man's blindness. It's really in general terms, but he states the reason. He says that the works of God, in verse 3, should be made manifest in him. Sometimes tragic things happen and suffering occurs simply because, or for this reason, that the works of God should be made manifest. That's a glorious thing. We can sit and assume that someone has done something terrible to cause this, or we can think this has come about that the works of God should be made manifest. One thing for certain, God has his own wise reasons for permitting suffering and all kinds of things. The secret things belong to the Lord. That is a lesson that we need to get a hold of. You do not have to figure everything out. You do not have to know the why. And even when you think you know the why, you may not. The secret things belong unto God. We don't know why a lot of things happen other than the fact that God allowed it to happen, God ordained it to happen. We know that. But why did God ordain it to happen? Why did God permit it to happen? That we don't know. Secret things belong to the Lord. But we do know this. God has his own wise reasons for everything. Jesus, in his answer, also reveals his earthly mission. I must work the works of him that sent me. That's telling me in the context that what Jesus was about to do on behalf of this blind man was part of the works that God sent him to do. While it is day, the night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, and again, this is in the context that this man's in darkness. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When someone lives in darkness, what do they need? They need light. What do people need? They need Christ. They don't need for you and I to figure out why they're in this condition. What they need is Christ. And we'll continue next week looking at Jesus actually healing this man. Let's look to the Lord. Word of prayer. Heavenly Father.